And I was so mad. I was, what the? I got up and I finally woke up and I, what the heck? You let me sleep. I'm like, what are we doing? I'm like, and that's when it just kind of blew up and I was like, I'm out of here. Like, I was just grabbed my, filled my waters and I'm like, I'm done.
Hey guys, I'm Nate Jukes, father of five, actuary by day, and trail runner before the sun comes up. Welcome to the Headlamp Hour, where we explore the stories of individuals mastering the delicate dance between work, family, and the exhilarating sport of trail running.
All right, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. We have a special guest today, Damon Chavez. He's a trail runner from Cedar City, Utah. At just 26 years old, he already has an impressive trail running resume. This year, he competed in the Tahoe 200, securing a third place finish there, as well as the Javelina 100, an 11th place finish there. And he balances his love of running with a full-time job, and he's one of the silent crushers of the trail running world. So welcome, Damon. Glad to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to have a conversation with you. Excited.
Yeah. So my opening question, before we really jump into things. So I want to ask you how you answered this back then when you were a kid, and how do you answer it now? So what did you want to be when you grow up, or what do you want to be when you grow up?
It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I always had a love for like law enforcement and just kind of that nature. I loved that part of the world, of military and law enforcement, and I don't know, FBI, all that stuff was always so cool to me growing up. Really love that part. Still do. Still find it interesting. So, but yeah.
Awesome. So police officer or FBI agent.
Yeah,
or,
that was always my gig. I always loved that. Looked up to those guys. Those guys are cool to me.
Awesome. And to be clear, you're not in that profession right now, right?
No, I'm not. Work in the metal and fabrication. We build a switch gears and
cool.
A lot of
awesome. Yeah, I do want to touch on your job a little bit later in the conversation. We'll definitely get back to that. All right, and how do you answer that now? What do you want to be when you grow up, Damon?
Hey, I love what I do. I mean, if not, then I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I love working with my hands. I like making stuff. I'm blue collar kind of guy, you know, grew up, you know, making stuff in my hand just seems so cool. I love it. It's just fun. So I never, every day is different.
Awesome. Well, good, 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 good answer. That's great. Living the dream.
Living the dream.
All right. Well, I want to talk about how me and you met. So if you'll indulge me, I want to tell the story of how you and me met. So we just met each other just a few months ago. We live in the same town here in Southern Utah, in Cedar City, Utah. And I was doing my first real trail race, a local race here in Cedar, a 50K, the Thunderbird 50K it's called. And I was leading the race and doing really well, and my wife was basically my crew, and she was getting me my bottles at all the aid stations and everything. But we had planned at this one aid station that we didn't think she would be able to get to in time to drop a bottle or like do a drop bag there, and it was at mile 21 or 22, you know, of a 31 mile race. And so, but I get to that aid station at mile 21 and the aid station is missing. Nobody's there. And Damon is volunteering at this race. Now, he wasn't the one responsible for that aid station. He was manning his post somewhere else. A person noticed and a volunteer, and she brought my bottle to the next aid station that I would pass through, in hopes to just kind of, you know, help me get my nutrition and fuel. And at that aid station was Damon. And so instead of just waiting for me to get to that aid station, the next one, he decided to run backwards along the course and with two bottles in hand and run my fuel to me down the course. So he saved me probably 20, 30 minutes from running on my own without any fuel. So that's the story of how me and Damon met. He came barreling down the trail with my bottles and helped me out. And that's just the kind of guy you are, Damon. So
I appreciate it.
Do you have any recollection of that day or that story at all?
Yeah, that was a pretty funny experience. Yeah, we got word that there was the aid station hadn't been set up yet. And we're like, oh no. And we don't know where you were at exactly. We just were like, crap. Like, and if I would have known, I would have definitely booked it down to that aid station. And I don't know, presented some help. I don't know. But I was manning another aid station and you just passed us and we got word and I was like, oh, that's not good at all. Like, he is moving for one. It just got to be the hottest point of the day. Like, it wasn't in the morning. It was hot. It was getting hot. And I was like, well, he's not going to be too much of a happy camper. And that's actually when I met your wife, Danielle. And so, yeah, one of the volunteers brought your fuel to her and was like, well, so we're kind of sitting there just like, crap, well, Nate's not going to be happy. And there's another guy, the second place guy right behind you, Drew. I was like, well, those guys are going to be hurting if there's no aid station down there. And so we're kind of like, just like, well, what do we do? We'll just wait for him, I guess. And it got to be kind of like longer, longer, longer. We're like, well, maybe we should like run down. I bet someone can like run down there and catch, well, Nate and see if he can, you know, present some help to him. And so that's when I was like, yeah, I'll go. So I just grabbed the waters and I just took off. I didn't even have my phone, I think. I just was gone. I was down the trail. I was like, well, I don't know how far he is, but whatever. So I got to you and yeah, you definitely weren't the happiest, but you were definitely like, who is this guy? Like, what is he doing with my water bottles? And yeah, I remember you said, are those mine? I'm like, dude, they're all yours. These are all yours. And so that's when, yeah, I was like, yeah, I know who you are. And I was like, doing good, you know? And so then I followed you back up to that aid station. I think it was only like, I don't know, you were down maybe a mile to the next aid station before I caught you. But
yeah, you definitely saved me a mile or two of more dehydration and
definitely and
running in the heat. So yeah, you had my two bottles, the one that I was supposed to get at mile 21, and I basically just tried to chug that.
You were definitely chugging them, and I felt so bad, but yeah.
No, it was good. It was a good, for me, I think it was a good, like, first trail run experience, though, because I think you got to, you know.
It's an imperfect world.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches and adapt and change your plan when circumstances happen. So,
beauty of it.
It was a good experience, and then yeah, just fun way to meet you. So
yeah, it was definitely a good time for sure. I think there's a couple pictures of us running into the aid station.
Yeah, and luckily it was a small enough race, and the race itself had made the mistake, and so I didn't get DQ'd or anything for aid not in the aid station. So
yeah, I don't think anybody would be mad. I mean, yeah, that was pretty bad deal, but it was good. I mean, like you says, it's part of ultra running. I learned to adapt. You know, not it's an imperfect world, so it makes it fun.
Exactly. So anyways, that's enough story about me, but it was just a fun, I think, intro to how I met you and just the type of person that you are, just out there volunteering and helping out where you can. So really cool. All right. So let's hear where you're from, Damon. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Utah, southern Utah. Grew up in Beaver, Utah, just a small little town, small high school. You know, everybody knows each other. Everybody, it's just a small town. It's good. I love it. It's my people down there. Yeah, I grew up there, and you know, it's grew up to love the mountains there. They're Tusher Mountains, home. I think the greatest mountains in the world, but you know, some
They're
people
pretty
say differently.
sweet. Yeah, I
Yeah.
haven't spent a ton of time. I haven't spent as much time as I've wanted to in those mountains. But I've heard really good things. The closest I've got is just the Beaver half marathon down the canyon road. So not the full experience yet. But
Yeah.
anyways, yeah. So talk about that. I guess is that kind of where your love for, I guess probably love for the mountains, but love for trail running started. Like, how did you get into trail running then?
I wouldn't say I got into trail running when I was living in Beaver. I live just an hour south of Beaver in Cedar City, like same town, you, but yeah, I grew up loving the mountains. I mean, that's what you do. It's a small town, not much to do. There's no, you know, not a lot to do in a small town, but you know, enjoy the mountains, fishing, hunting, hiking. You name it. I mean, we did it all. I worked on a trails crew for the Forest Service. That's where it really kind of trail running definitely where I was introduced to it. You know, I didn't run. I was always pretty athletic. I mean, I could, you know, keep up. I was doing sports in high school.
What kind of
Did
sports were
football.
you doing?
I did soccer and football. So,
Okay.
but yeah, so I was really athletic and I did like a few cross country races in junior high and but nothing in high school. It was just kind of like, hey, come out, you know, got invited by a friend here and there. But yeah, so I was always pretty athletic, but I didn't really hear about trail running till I was on the Forest Service. We were clearing the trails for Tusher Mountain runs or Tusher Mountain 100K, 70K. And I was like, there's no way these guys are doing that many miles in the mountains. Like, you can't run up a hill. Like, there's no way. You 50 miles, 60 miles, that's impossible. Like, you know, just like, yeah, you have to jump over logs and run in the. I was like, that, no, who's doing that? They're crazy. Like, there's probably like 10 people doing it, you know? Didn't know anything about it. And that's kind of where it kind of like struck me, like, really? These guys are really doing that? Like, you know, okay, whatever. You know, so we would clear the trails, you know, chainsaws, you know, cutting trees, making, you know, making a trail, I guess, walkable.
Awesome.
So
That's really cool. That yeah, I think we all have that moment at some point in our lives of as trail runners when we like find out like, wait, people like actually do this? Like they run how far? Like
yeah.
and through this, yeah, and through this like really tough terrain and all that.
It's
So
a big
that's
wake-up
interesting.
call.
Yeah, and you got like a firsthand view of that, I guess, you know.
Right.
As one clearing the trails for that race. That's really
Right.
cool. So yeah, I wanted to talk about that Tusher's 100K put on by Air Vipa. You've done it several times, right? You've done it, I think, four times. Is that
Yeah,
right?
four times. Yep, completed it four times.
Awesome. And you're signed up for it next year as well, correct?
Yep, so going into my fifth time in a
That's
row.
awesome.
So
And the 100K distance, is that right?
yep. So got that going on. So it's one of the
Awesome.
races I'm signed up for, but
Yeah, so I guess just like in the context of, you know, I'm sure that just race means a lot to you. You know, it's right in your hometown backyard. You know, talk about that and why you signed up for it maybe in the first place. And I think you know, you kind of hinted to that already with your work with the Forest Service, but maybe a little bit more on why you decided to sign up for that one and why you keep coming back to it. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it's home. It's, you know, like I says, where you grew up. And it's, to me, like, it's still, to me, it's still just mind blowing that, you know, people can run these mountains and, you know, high elevation and still, you know, smile at the end of the day and love it. It's, but yeah, it's always been my number one race. I love that. I love that. I love the course. You see the beauty of and the beast of that course. You hit some really beautiful, beautiful views, beautiful trails. I mean, nobody's out there, you know. It's just so, I don't know, it's amazing out there.
That's so cool. That's awesome. Yeah, the Tushers are an amazing mountain range, kind of a hidden gem. Even in Utah, I feel like, you know, most people talk about the Uintas, up north, closer to the Salt Lake area. Or they talk about, you know, the views in Zion National Park or Moab Arches, things like that. But the Tushers are really special as well. There's, you know, Delano Peak above 12,000 feet, the fourth highest peak in Utah. And and like you said, just incredible views. So
and it's really, really yeah, cool. It's definitely a, I mean, a good test to ultra running. So it's always still a test to me. It's crazy and it's hard. You know, it's like I know those mountains, I know those trails. It's like, you know, it's hard. It's a hard race, and I love it. I love the difficulty of it. So
yeah, talk about that, the difficulty of that race a little bit more, because I know that, yeah, I don't know if it's like people in Beaver that put on races that like to make them extra tough, because I did the Beaver half marathon, which is obviously a road marathon down straight down the canyon, so not very difficult except for just the
quad. It's difficult. I mean, just no, the, it's difficult. There's no easy race in Beaver, that's for sure.
But my friends like did the full marathon, and instead of it just coming straight down the canyon, they started at the ski resort, and then for the first like mile they're going like straight up the hill, like, and like around the parking lot, like up, you know, it almost right. sounded like they were running up the ski run for the first like 6 miles, and then like down the canyon for the last 20. Right. So you're just like, legs are already shot. And right. then like, yeah. And then I've also heard that the Tushers race, you know, the last 400 meters like alone are just like straight uphill. Oh.
It's there's no flat ground up there. There's none. Like, it's either downhill or uphill, and you're 90% of the race, it feels like you are climbing the entire race. It is gnarly. I mean, arguably the hardest 100K race, I think. I don't know. I'm sure there is harder, obviously, but definitely it is a test to anybody. And yeah. Nobody gets done with it and goes, ah, I think I might do that next year, you know, or, you know, not a lot of people do, you know, they're just, it's a hard race. I mean, the elements is under, I think it's like rained every time I've done that race. I mean, complete exposed on mountaintops. I mean, it's gnarly hail that's just been pelting your skin so bad. It's gnarly. For sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love
it's
it.
Technical, sometimes, very technical.
Yeah. Sometimes it's, you know, it's good to like, I guess, talk about this. Like, what's the balance between like a race that's like runnable and like nice and groomed trails? Like, what's the benefit of those types of races? But then what's also the benefit of some races that seem like just like they try to make it like unnecessarily hard? Like, I've heard stories of like Speed Goat 50K that's just like they make the course like go up this crazy part just on the side that doesn't even make sense, except to just make it harder for no reason. Like,
right. I
guess, like, in your experience, what maybe do you like, or do you like both of them?
I definitely draw to those races more that are, you know, hard, that are very difficult, and, you know, you're climbing. I love that. It's more of like a survival kind of thing, but not really. I mean, it is. I mean, I'm drawn to those type of races a lot. That's my forte. I like the level of, like, how it levels out your competitiveness. You know, it's not easy. It's hard for everybody, even the elites. You know, it's just so hard. I love those races.
That's cool.
But yeah, the Tushers are definitely that race. It's definitely, if that's what you're into, that's the race to start with, or, you know, anybody.
Yeah. I think that's cool what you said about, like, it's almost like an equalizer when it's a really, you know, tough terrain, a lot of hiking.
Right. You know, elements.
You're not running, you know, 630s.
No.
That kind of stuff, or even down that kind of stuff a lot of the time. No. So.
And I'm not discrediting, you know, say a flatter race, more runnable race. Those are very difficult as well, too. I mean, say, for instance, Javelina 100 or Javelina 100K. You still climb quite a bit. I mean, it's, you know, people think you don't climb that much, but you still climb a little bit. But there's definitely some difficulty to those races, too. So I'm not discrediting, you know, one race or the other, but that's just what I draw to. I like mountains. I like I says, being in the Sufferfest a little bit more.
Very good. Very nice. Love it. All right. So now I want to talk a little bit about other stuff that you've got going on in your life for a little bit, and then we'll come back to trail running. But so you mentioned briefly, but can you mention again what it is you do for work? What's your job, your day job?
So metal fabrication, welding, just metal fabrication, sheet metal. We build electric, like, switch gear. You know, it's just a blue collar job, and I like that. You know, I really do enjoy getting my hands dirty. I like building stuff with my hands, creating stuff with your hands, you know, engaging in, you know, that kind of atmosphere.
Awesome. That's really cool. I guess, yeah, I wanted to know, like, exactly what a switchboard is for those of us that are so, uninformed. What's a switchboard?
It's like, it's controlling and protecting, like, and isolating power systems. Regulate power and meter systems. They're like powerhouses, and basically just regulate power systems, controlling and protecting, basically big boxes outside of buildings, airports, that do a bunch. They do, we it's all custom switch gear. So everything's different, you know, customer, you know, custom stuff. So
gotcha. Yeah,
electrical field.
So, okay, cool. So I guess, what is your, like, day to day look like, as far as like, do you run in the morning before work? Do you run after? Like, at what time are you at work? What time do you come home? What's that look like for you?
So, typical day, 4:30, wake up at 4:30, make some breakfast. I, once in a while, I feel a little bit motivated to do a early morning run, but that usually starts about 3:30 in the morning, you know, earlier than that. So I typically don't do that, just because it's, I don't know, not that hard, I guess, yet.
Holy cow. So you got to be at work at like 5 or
so,
6 a.m.
Yeah, so I go to work at 5:30.
Wow.
Work 10-hour days, Usually a lunch break, and I work with a bunch of great guys that we're all, you know, love athletics, you know, love being fit. So sometimes I'll run a I get an hour lunch break, so I'll usually do a 5K at lunch. I'll get home, run a 5K at lunch. Depends on the day. Just get a few miles in, shake it out, head back to work, and then I'm off at 4:30. 4:30. Get home, wind down a little bit. It's not like I usually jump right into my shoes and go for a run. I'll usually stretch, kind of hang out, you know, decompress over the day. But yeah, then after that, I'm usually out the door, you know, 5:30 for, you know, my workout. So.
Wow. That's a, I didn't realize. Yeah. That, you were up so early, and that's some hard work. That's awesome.
Yeah.
As you know, the name of this podcast is the Headlamp Hour. And so, well, you may not be doing a lot of running with a headlamp. You're definitely like working with a headlamp.
I'm definitely up. Don't worry. You can definitely, I'll definitely be up. So yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. And I guess in these winter months, you might actually be running with a headlamp.
I'm definitely running in the headlamps for sure.
There's 5:30, 6 o'clock.
There's definitely not a lot of light at the end of this time of year. So headlamps are definitely my best friend this year, time of year.
Cool. Well, let me ask you this question. With your job, it being so, you know, I guess kind of pretty demanding, it sounds like, especially long hours and things like that. Do you find, and maybe this varies from day to day, but do you find that it like kind of competes for your energy to trail run, or does it also give you enough of a break, like mentally, where you're like ready to go then and get out on your run during the day? So just talk about that, kind of the balance between work and running, and if they like are competing forces or more like puzzle pieces that fit together, complementary forces.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely days I get home and I'm like, oh no, running is the last thing I want. I'm human just like everybody, but definitely have those feelings a lot, you know, especially a manual labor job. But I don't know, when it's just what you know and what you work with, and running's your kind of like become my escape to, you know, decompress through the day. That's a lot of, you know, work through the day, that a lot of steps, you know, a lot of manual labor, you know, it's hard. And it's hard to find that balance some days. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of days I'm like, no, I'm not going for run. Some days I'll stare at my shoes when I get home and just like, no, I'll just look. It'll be 7 o'clock and I'm like, no. Oh, I need to get out the door. But I've never regret a run. It's my escape. It's, you know, speaking for a lot of trail runners, I mean, we love it. We love the mountains. We love, it's where we clear your mind, all runners. It's what, you know, clears your mind through the day. So if I don't run, it's makes for, you know, a lot of sleepless nights, you know, that I'd like, oh, I'd got to get up and do it again, you know, of whatever the day may bring the next day at work.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like it, for me, it helps like me reset, like you're saying, or like clear my mind, you know, instead of just like, then it almost feels like all work and no play, you know, type of thing.
Right.
Even though it is like tough, you know, to get out the door sometimes to run.
Right.
Like you said, I love what you said. Like, you never regret getting out on a run. Like,
never.
But like almost 100% of the time you regret not going for the run. So
every single time you will regret. I don't know. I like that. I like being tired, you know, I have too much energy. I need to get rid of it. So And I,
well, I've got some kids you can watch. They'll
yeah,
bring some of your agency or energy.
Right.
I mean,
right. Bring them
no,
over.
I'm just kidding. They've got lots of energy too. All right, cool. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your, or I guess actually I did have one more question kind of relating to work. So you mentioned, you know, you're on your feet all day, you're working with your hands, you're, you know, you don't have a desk job like I do. So when you're injured, let's say, or when you have been injured before in the past, what kind of things do you do to, you know, try to recover from that injury, even though you have, you know, a job where you're kind of on your feet all day walking around? Has that been difficult, or do you not notice it because it's not running, so it doesn't hurt your injury, or what?
Talk about that absolutely. Absolutely. There's lots of days that, you know, I have a, you know, back problem. You throw out your back and try running with, you know, thrown out back. It gets pretty hard. I'm a big believer in movement. Movement is, you know, movement. What is it? Motion is lotion. Movement is medicine. I think your body adapts. I don't know. I haven't broke a bone. Like, I don't suggest walking, working with a broken bone or whatever, but I do believe your body adapts to the stress level you put it in. So if you're not asking much of it, you're not going to get much. So you get used to it. I mean, it's just what you do. There's no other option. It's just, I'm going to go for a run. There's not an option. I've got to still, you know, compete. I still love trail running. I want to compete. I want to be better. So I think, you know, with dealing with injuries, I don't know. I wouldn't suggest it a lot of the time. Like, it's kind of being, you know, a little too hard-headed. Knuckle dragger syndrome, I guess, is what I have. It's just, I'll just, you know, ibuprofen, KT tape, whatever. It'll pass. And I don't know. So far, it's gotten me this far.
Yeah, you're young still, though. You're in the sub 30 club, so
maybe I'll learn someday. Maybe it'll catch up with me, but for now, I just, you know, take it easy a little bit. Go, you know, but I still believe in, you know, getting your work in every day. And, you know, some days it might just be stretching. Some days it might just be, you know, workouts on the floor. But you know, gotta find a way to get it in.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I just wonder as well. So, like, if you're at work and you're injured, do you ever wish, like, oh, I wish I could, like, sit down so that I'm not, like, further injuring myself or whatever? Do you get that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that, like, doubts, like, I shouldn't be doing this. Like, I need to be, like, I shouldn't be lifting. I shouldn't be on my feet. You know, I got shin splints. I got Achilles issues, whatever. But, no, and my boss, I have a really good crew. We've got, you know, they're understanding. They know, oh, you just ran 100 miles. Like, take it easy. Like, have a seat for the day. So I have a really good boss, really good coworkers. They all know. Then nobody's ever, it's never demanding, like, you know, breaking your back 24/7. So it's pretty relaxed. But, yeah, you still have to do your job. Still have to pay the bills.
Absolutely. Yeah, get it done. Cool. All right. I want to talk about some of the races that you've competed in this year. So one of the kind of biggest results that you had was at the Tahoe 200. You got third place male, fourth overall. And the Tahoe 200 is arguably, you know, one of the biggest, most prestigious 200 races in the country, if not in the world. So I wanted to know, like, did that feel to you like it was kind of a breakout race or kind of like a coming out moment for you? Like, how did that feel?
It feels great. I mean, it's definitely cool. It's just, another thing you're just, yeah, it's, I'm proud of that. Absolutely. It was a great race. It was a great turnout. I definitely didn't know that I was going to do that well. I mean, I knew I was definitely for sure set in stone. I was finishing that race. I didn't care what place. It was just, I was getting through it. There was no quitting. I knew that was not even on the table. I was getting through that race. But I don't know, perseverance. It's a lot, it was a hard race. There was definitely nothing easy about that race. I mean, 200 miles is a lot to take in.
But. Yeah. So the longest race I've done is 50 miles. And that was a slog for me. So, and I'd say, like, you know, most trail runners are probably doing a max of 100. There's only a select few that are crazy enough to do double that distance, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but how do you finish a 200 mile race? You know, over, it took you, I think, like 70 hours. What are you thinking about? Like, how do you finish?
It's all mental. It really is. I mean, yeah. anything past a marathon, it's mental. I mean, there's no discredit. Anything 1 mile is hard. It's, I don't know. It's mental. You have to learn to love it and be love the outdoors. I mean, and love being on your feet, in which, I don't know, maybe my job is, you know, good for that. Long days, long hours. Yeah, and I definitely use that as a, you know, training tool as well. But yeah, it's mental. 100%. Everything about, I think, trail running is mental. I mean, it's, you know, 80% mental, 20% physical, I think. But I don't know. You just,
yeah.
There's,
well, that's so interesting. Obviously, you have to have some, you know, physical capabilities, right, to walk and
right,
and finish. But, like, yeah, I think you're right.
Our minds definitely quit way before our bodies will. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Well, just if you can, just in a nutshell, or in a brief, you know, pass through of it, what happened through the race? Like, give me a race recap. What happened? How did it start? What was, like, in the middle? How did it finish? Where were you kind of place wise? How did you move up? How did you, you know, that kind of stuff?
Right. So the race actually got postponed due to the snow this past year, which was crazy. So it actually got postponed, I don't know, like a month. I can't even remember. But so the snow was obviously a big factor. There's still a ton of snow left on the course, but it was also getting pretty hot. So, but basically the first day, it was hot. I mean, I don't even know what the temperatures was. It was hot and high altitude. It definitely took out a lot of people. That first day was pretty hard on a lot of people. It dropped. That's where, I don't know how many people dropped the first day, but that's where everybody had definitely, you know, leveled out. It leveled out the playing field that first day. Going into the night, I don't know. I was doing pretty good. I was staying pretty up at the top. I don't know what place I was, but I was staying at the top, and I liked that. It was, you know, that borderline of uncomfortable, but yeah, I still got, you know, 200, you know, 150 miles by, you know, with the time the night hit. So it was kind of that uncomfortable, but, you know, moving. So the night hit that first night, and it was pretty hard. I was struggled going into one of these aid stations. I mean, there's a lot of people that saw me and were like, you were a wreck. I was freezing to death. So I went from being extremely hot to now shivering, like, uncontrollably by a little propane fire, you know, at an aid station, just completely like, what am I doing? Everything's soaked to the bone because you're drenching yourself in the daytime and all the streams. So I was completely soaked to the bone. I pulled out my coat and it was completely drenched. So everything's just kind of a disaster. Finally got the urge to move, started moving through the night. Definitely started getting pretty sick that first night. I wasn't not doing too well. But pulled through, going into the night, came to the next aid station. Can't even remember aid stations they were called, but decided, I was like, well, I'm going to try and sleep this first night. Didn't sleep at all. Couldn't sleep. I was just too, like, I need to get going. I need to get going. Too antsy. I couldn't sleep at any of the aid stations, actually. So
let's pause there for a second. Actually, I did want to ask you about sleep strategy. So I've heard, you know, that's something you have to take into account in longer than 100 mile races, which, you know, again, only a select few trail runners do that. So I've heard, like, you know, it's good that to have some kind of sleep strategy or sleep plan going into it. You know, I've heard, like, sleep and try to go to sleep, and if you can't fall asleep within a certain amount of time, just get back up and go. I've heard people taking trail naps, you know, just on the side of the trail away from aid stations, or trying to sleep in aid stations. Like, what was your strategy going in, and then what kind of happened, what actually happened with your sleep strategy?
My sleep strategy is probably not one people should take in. I'm definitely that knuckle dragger. I fit into that. I was like, I was not going to sleep. I was like, sleep? No, I just need to keep moving. That was
your plan.
That was my plan. I was going to push to, that is not what I recommend, but I don't know. It worked, but I did sleep a little bit, obviously. I slept, I don't know how, like an hour, 45 minutes the whole entire time, hour 15. I'm not sure. But most people, they usually sleep after about 100 miles. And I don't know why I thought I needed to sleep. It was probably like mile 60. And I just couldn't shut my mind off. I just, you know, that competitiveness and seeing everybody in and out of aid stations, I just can't. It's hard for me. That dog, that competitiveness just comes out. But yeah, I would definitely sleep. Sleep's good. But I joke around with my crew, my parents and all. I don't know. We joke around that I didn't come here to sleep. You know, these long races, I didn't come here to sleep. Well, I'm always saying that. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. What's your sleep strategy to not sleep? I didn't come here to sleep.
I definitely didn't come here to sleep. But yeah, so second day, going to the second day, again, very hot. I definitely think the second day was hotter. And now these aid stations are pretty wild. They're, I think, 18 miles apart from each other. So, wow. So you definitely got to pack a little heavy. There's a lot to it. A lot of filtering water out of every stream, snow banks. it was pretty far few between water sources. Yeah, like I said, there's a lot that goes on in 70 hours. But the second day moved pretty good, though. I mean, it was pretty hot that second day. It was pretty miserable.
At what point during the race did you know that you were competing for a podium position?
It was – so it's that – this, like, is it was kind of – the Tahoe had a fire a couple years back, and it got – the course got rerouted. So it's actually one big out and back course. And I'm not sure what point – I can't even remember now at what point it comes back. But that's kind of when we started getting word that, like, hey, there's, you know, a lot of people have dropped that, you know, you're in a good standing. And I think it was probably about when I started coming back. Gosh, what I don't even know what mile that was. I don't even know. But
mile 100 then, like,
it was probably 100. 125, 150. around
Okay.
there. So,
Was it your crew told you or your other
yeah,
people saying like you're in third place or what?
yeah, definitely my crew. I was talking to my crew a lot, and over the phone, texting, what standings I'm in. And like I says, I was fighting. I was in the top 20, top 10 for most of the race. So there's still that, I got to keep moving. So there was always still a competitiveness the entire time. But yeah, it was about 120, coming back, back home, I should say. It was kind of like this might be reachable. Let's, talking with my dad was my main crew. He and my mom. So they're
Oh,
saying,
really?
you, yeah, yeah,
That's
they're,
awesome.
yeah. And I didn't have any pacers this race, so, and I did this, solo, but and just my mom, my dad, that was my crew,
Yeah,
but.
so let's pause on that for a second. That's really, I think, unique and interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely heard of family members crewing before. Usually it's a spouse, significant other, or obviously, friends, trail buddies, but your mom and dad, that's really cool. So they still live in Beaver, I'm guessing, Beaver, Utah,
Yep.
and they came out and crewed you at the Tahoe 200, huh?
Dude, they're my biggest fans. They're everything to me. I love my mom and dad. They're everything, but they won't ever miss a race. I can guarantee you that. They've never missed any of my races.
Really? So they
No,
come to all of them.
my dad's taught me how to work hard my entire life and work hard, work with your hands. That's where I guess my background of hard work comes from is definitely my parents. They taught me everything.
That's
But
so
my dad's a
cool.
big coach. He's always been a big coach. He's the Beaver High School soccer coach, head coach for Beaver High School.
Oh, nice.
He's been head coach for a lot of football. I mean, everything since I was T-ball, growing up. He's always been my biggest fan, my biggest supporter. Him and my mom, like both always been there.
That's really cool. That's so awesome. I guess have you ever had a race where either they haven't crewed you or there's like, not a lot of crew involved, or you've had somebody else crew you then?
Nope, they've been at
No.
every
Okay.
single one of my races. They have
Because I
not
heard.
missed a single
Wow.
race.
That's so cool.
So
Yeah, because I was
I
going to
don't.
ask you, like what's the difference, or what do you feel is a benefit maybe of, having your own mom or dad? Because I've also heard at least with like spouses or something, sometimes you like don't want your spouse to be in your crew because they're
Oh,
either too hard
absolutely.
on you, too soft on you, or if it's your mom or dad, they're like wearing their mom and dad hat and not their trail crew hat. So what's the
Oh, you're.
dynamics like
I mean, it's definitely a
with
family feud. I mean,
that?
there's definitely some harsh words, harsh comments, but it's all love. There's never a moment like, I mean, we'll fight just like, son and parent. We'll have discussions that people might think, wow, like, geez, but like, well, these, they're. Can't believe he would say that, but it's all love. I mean, it really is. Well, me and my dad we'll fight back and forth, but we know that's just the competitiveness of both of us, of a coach and a son, I guess. But
Take
he.
us through maybe one of those moments if you can think of one, maybe at Tahoe or a different race where, what was the fight about? What was
So
it?
yeah, at Tahoe, it was coming back. It's kind of funny. I still joke about it, but I got to an aid station and I just kicked back and I was competing at this point. Like I knew like I need to get going, but we're getting late in the race. I think we're moving into our third night. Yeah, third night of the race. And It was still light out. I was getting to the aid station. I was just kind of taking my time. Like, it's not real fast at these aid stations. You can, but you definitely want to kind of take your time, you know, to recover. But I get to the aid station and I get to our car, and they have it all laid out, you know, chair, everything just ready for me. And we're just talking normally, no, you know, just strategizing. And I remember my mom, she was started massaging my calves. I said, yeah, like, you know, just massaging my calf. And I remember I was just like, oh, that felt good. And I remember I just passed out instantly, just in a little camp chair. And they knew I did not want to sleep. They knew I had to keep going. Like, they knew I wanted to get out of that aid station, but I just needed to regroup for a second. And I don't even remember it. They lied to me for the longest time. Like, oh, it was like 5 minutes or 3 minutes we let you sleep. But it was way longer than that. It was like, you know, 30 minutes. And I was so mad. I got up and I finally woke up and I, what the heck? You let me sleep. I'm like, what are we doing? I'm like, and that's when it just kind of blew up. And I was like, I'm out of here. Like, I was just filled my water. And I'm like, I'm done. Like, I was pissed, man. I stormed out of that aid station and I can't believe you guys let me sleep. Like, I'm trying to, you know, compete. And they're like, that's you need, you were running, you know, 20 minutes of trail naps, you know, spread out, like you needed it. So it was good. Like, there was like, I definitely don't regret it at all now, but I'm always joking with them. Like, oh yeah, unless you let me sleep at an aid station, maybe I could do better. I don't know. We're always dishing it out, but it's seriously just all complete love. Like, we know each other that well. It's, you know, it's just all love. And but yeah, it was a good time.
Well, it sounds like you got pretty good dynamics in your crew, despite having, you know, family members as part of it. And maybe especially because you have a good relationship with your parents. And that's so funny. Absolutely. That's great.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's
cool. I love it. Love it. So take us to the finish. What was that like?
That night going to the finish is when the real struggle came out, especially competing when you know, okay, you're in fourth and fifth place and you're shooting for that podium. And you're running on and, you know, hour 15, you know, 45 minutes of sleep. I don't even know how long it was. 45 minutes of sleep the entire race over 3 days. Going into that night was, I mean, talking with everybody at that race is when the hallucinations just really started coming out. And that's when it started to fall apart. Everything kind of, you know, you start to get sloppy, obviously, at that point in the race. But I definitely picked it up going back. I knew the course at that point, like I said, is an out and back. So I really started to pick it up, the pace, and really started, you know, competing and passing people. But yeah, like I says, at this point, my watch had failed on me. It died. So I don't even know what mile I'm at or what miles I had to be to the next aid station. I was completely going off of like where I was at from my GPS tracker and contacting with my dad. He's telling me what you're at, what you need to be, what, you know, where the standings are. But that's when the real hallucination started to come out. And it was, I don't know, 20 miles from the aid station was when, oh man, everything was really falling apart. My headlamp started dying.
So you had some hallucinations then? What kinds of things were you seeing?
Yeah, so I've had over the course, I had two different types of hallucinations. That one in particular was, it was like a winding of the trail was winding in and out of coves. And it was seriously looked like it was repeating itself over and over and over and over again. Like, it just was like constantly like same rock, same tree, same rock, same tree, same rock. And it just was started really messing with your head because you're just so tired at this point, especially when you're trying to compete and not get passed by the person behind you. But yeah, so then I started to lose my mind completely. I started calling my dad, like, where am I? Like, and I was honestly and truthfully, I thought I was in Beaver. Like, I thought I was on a trail in Beaver. This is legit. I'm talking to my dad. So I called my dad, and it's a long story. I'm starting to kind of forget it at this point. He'd be able to tell you all about it. But, and I'm like, why would anybody do this to me? Why was anybody like, why would the race director, the race do this to me? This is stupid. I just come get me. I thought I was at this point. I literally thought I was at like this intersection in Beaver where he could come pick me up. So I was like, come, where I'm at, like, come get me. Like, I'm done. And I'm only like 15 miles to the finish. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you need to sleep. And he's telling me to sleep. I'm like, no, I don't need to sleep. I'm like, I'm fine. But I was just completely out of my mind. Like, what a lost person would be like, out 3 days, no sleep. I was completely out of my mind. Pitch black outside, my headlamp's dying, everything's dying. And I was like, come get me. Like, this is, you just, I'm done. Like, this is, just come get me. And he's like, no. He's like, wake up. He's like, take a nap. And he's like, just take a nap. And I remember I was like, finally came to realization. I'm like, all right. And I couldn't even hold myself up anymore. And I right on the trail, pretty much head between my knees, fell asleep right on the middle of the trail. I set an alarm on my phone for like 3 minutes. I was like, I just need to just sleep for just a little bit
Reset.
and it reset. And I snoozed it like twice. And I was like, finally, I woke up and was like, okay, like, all right, I'm almost done. Like, I need to finish this. Like,
Kind of
so
came
then,
to
yeah.
and
And
then
by
wow.
then, I saw the sun started to come up. And that's what was kind of like, oh, it's literally like a big awakening. Like, wow, like thank goodness. And but kind of like a lot of the stress went away. I wasn't worried about my headlamp dying. I wasn't, I was getting
Yeah.
excited. So yeah, that was an interesting
That's
between
wild,
that
man.
and the another time I was seeing dragon, the trees were turning into dragons. I had a cat following me. I looked down, there was a cat following me. Yeah,
Oh, that's crazy.
it
Dude,
definitely
I don't.
hallucinations come out.
Oh my gosh. I'm very curious about how I would do. I feel like I would just I do I don't think I would do very well at all on that kind of sleep deprivation. That is like just, but I also am really curious, so I might have to just sign up for a 200 just to see what kind of
For
cats and
me,
dragons I
at
see
the
on the trail.
time, it was not fun at all. Like, it was
Yeah,
not, like, I was
that's
not
true.
laughing about it at all. Like, I was sick usually. I was distraught. I don't know.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun at all at the time. Now it's funny. Makes a good story now, but at the time,
Yeah.
it definitely was not funny.
Well, that's yeah, that is funny. So how did it feel finally to then cross the finish line after 70 hours, 3 nights,
Just
200
a
miles?
big relief of just like I actually did that. Like, wow. I don't know. I wasn't jumping for joy too much. It was just like I did it. Like, just so much gratification of, wow. It was good. It was definitely, I don't know. It was good. See my mom and dad. Definitely it was just hard. I was just start crying, just absolutely just excited. Just they helped me get there. I owe it to them just as, they helped me through everything. So I saw my dog and that was a big so it
Yeah,
was
we haven't
good.
even talked about Nova yet. Your
Yeah.
dog, German short-haired pointer, is that right?
Yep. So she's my training pacer.
There you go. Yeah, that's so cool, man. And a podium finish to boot. That's great.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. Well, congrats again on that awesome finish at Tahoe. Definitely on the bucket list. I don't know if I'd do it anytime soon. I feel like you're probably one of the youngest, guys to be dabbling in the 200
there's a distance. There's a few of them that are younger than me, and man, I just, I don't know, they're ballers.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, I want to just briefly touch on Javelina. We're kind of coming close to the hour here, but so Javelina 100, they're down in Phoenix, Arizona at the end of October, kind of a big, almost like end of season Halloween party, trail race event. What was the desire? What was the impetus to sign up for that race? You know, like you said at the beginning, you're more into the more mountainous hiking type races, and Javelina, is not that, although you did say, you know, you admit that it does have some climbing, but it's mostly runnable. It's 100 miles, and you were still able to crush it. 11th place, male in a deep field. So what was the impetus behind, wanting to do that race?
The competitiveness. I mean, I wanted to compete. I wanted to see what I could really do. I never actually ran that far. Like, I've never actually ran 100 miles. It's usually a hiking or walking, you know, but I don't know. I wanted to, the strategies of, you know, of a lap type, you know, a loop type course of, I wanted to, you know, see what I could do that distance, really. So,
yeah, that's really interesting. Like that you said, you know, I've never run that far. When obviously we just talked about you, quote unquote, running a 200 mile, but
right.
it is a completely different sport, yeah, almost, when you're actually running, or could be running theoretically, every step of that race. So
right, it's definitely, it's still hard. There's no discredit at all. It was a struggle, but yeah, I enjoyed it. I actually really did enjoy it. Feels good to actually say, like, 99% of that race I did run, you know.
Yeah.
So it was good. And
that's
definitely fought hard for that one. So it was a long day as well.
That's so cool. That's awesome. Yeah. I was following, you know, obviously the live stream. I was like so excited, so pumped for you to see you there, you know. I was so, and you know, maybe we can talk about this now as you've let it sink in, but you know, obviously, like, you know, numbers are kind of arbitrary, but you probably were like, dang, I was this close to a top 10 finish, you know. So talk about that, as far as like the difference between 11th and 10th place. And I'm not trying to like offend
you. No,
anything, because 11th is amazing.
My pacers will definitely tell you, like, dude, like I had pacers at that point in time, Luke and Matt. They were definitely pushing me. They're like, "You're in 10th place, dude. You're in 10th place." And I that definitely was like a big slap in the face. Like, get it. But I was trying dear hard at that point in time. To catch it seemed like every time, like, okay, I'm making good grounds, you know, what's the, how far ahead of me? It seemed like the next guy would just pick up, you know, 10th place would just pick up farther, and it was just like he knew I was coming, it seemed like, for him. So he was definitely pushing, but yeah, it definitely was like, oh, I was trying with everything I had. Pacers were everything. They were outstanding pacers. They kept me up to pace and everything. They're great.
That's cool.
So,
yeah,
I owe it to them just as much. So,
well, I think that's really awesome. And of course, you know, while you wanted the 10th place finish, like 11th is just
so badly.
Outstanding, especially in how deep of a field that was. You know, it's a golden ticket race for Western states,
right.
So that's like,
right,
you know, on everybody's mind going in.
Right.
And that's so cool, man. So congrats again on an awesome Javelina finish.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to do a quick kind of lightning round of questions to kind of wrap up. So, you ready?
Go for
so
it.
So these are just kind of quick answers. We won't go into too much detail, but well, we might if it's depending how interesting the answer is. All right. So if trail races had walkout songs, what would your walkout song be?
Ooh, ooh. I don't know. I've never thought about that. Shoot. I don't know. TikTok by Kesha. I don't know.
That's the best.
Wake up in the morning. Feel like P. Diddy. I don't know.
TikTok.
Probably so. Probably let's go. Well, I'll say Eminem till I collapse. I don't know. Just,
okay.
Pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Good. All right. What do you eat before? What do you eat for breakfast on race day?
Oatmeal, usually. Bowl of oatmeal. Keep it light.
Cool. Favorite piece of gear for racing? The gear that you can't go without.
Headphones, gotta have my aftershocks, gotta have my tunes. I will always be running with music, podcasts. So it's definitely my escape of everything. So headphones.
Interesting. Cool. Okay. Craziest weather conditions that you've encountered during a race?
It's gotta be on the Tushers, man. So it's pretty unforgiving. Hailstorm, rain. You couldn't even see 2 feet in front of you. I mean, pretty unforgiving up there, man.
Yeah, those
and
like
cold and late. Wet.
Yeah, for sure. Exposed mountain peaks above tree line.
Yeah.
Anything like afternoon in the summer, it's
oh,
just like
man.
You're going to get hit with something.
Yep.
Okay. Your go-to mantra to push through tough moments. Any like thoughts come to mind of when you're trying to just grind through and push through tough things? What are you saying to yourself?
My mantra since I've ever started, never quit. Just simple, never quit. That's always been my saying, never quit.
Love it. Love it.
Never
yeah,
quit.
perfect. Never quit. All right. So, what's next on your race calendar? What have you got coming up? I know we mentioned before that you're signed up for Tushers next July, right? It's in July.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
What
I
about
think
that?
So.
What else?
We got Black Canyons 100K coming up February. So excited for that. Been training for that right now. Training's been solid for that. Few lotteries I'm in right now. We'll see how that goes. Hasn't been too great so far. Hard Rock, no. Western, no. But got a few lotteries I'm in. Looking into another 200. I don't know for sure yet if it's Cocodona or Moab or maybe even Tahoe again. I'm not sure. I definitely want to do another 200, dive into the 200s still.
Yeah, that seems like, and I don't want to put you in a box, but like, it definitely seems like the longer, the better for you almost. Like
100%. I like the longer distances.
That's cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll definitely like, you know, link your Instagram and Strava and stuff in the show notes so people can find you there and follow along on your journey and your upcoming races. But as we wind down here, I wanted to tie it back to the theme of this whole podcast, again, the Headlamp Hour. You know, people like you, full-time job, hard work, blue collar, never quit, getting their runs in when they can, making it a family affair. I love that. Like having your mom and dad as your crew. That is so cool. So I guess the question here is, who or what is your headlamp, and how has that thing or that person guided you through the sometimes dark and technical trails of life?
Well, yeah, we've pretty much already touched on it. I'm definitely going to give it to my parents, my mom, my dad. They are they are definitely my headlight. I don't they're definitely my everything. I owe everything to them. They've taught me the definition of hard work and perseverance. They are I best friends. So couldn't live without them.
Love it. Yeah, what a great answer and good way to cap off the conversation. As you know, your mom and dad have been kind of a theme throughout everything that we've touched on and talked about. So cool. Again, thanks for coming on the podcast, Damon. So excited to have you here and excited to keep training with you and Hayden here in Cedar City. We've got a good now trail
We got a
contingency
crew,
here
man.
in Southern Utah. So
We got a crew. It's fun.
it's been fun. So
Thanks for having me on. It's really been awesome talking trails.
absolutely. All right. You have a good one, Damon, and we'll see you later.
We'll see ya.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.